I will be reading Psalm 139 from the New International Version. You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise in the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, your right hand will hold me fast. The night will shine like day, for darkness is as light to you. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. How precious to me are your thoughts, God. How vast is the sum of them. May God bless the reading of his word.
Well, it's my privilege and delight to introduce to you this morning Bev Miller. She grew up around Wauseon, Ohio, and still lives in that area. Or again, you've been other places, but again, yeah. And she first came to Oregon, Western Mennonite School, in the mid-70s, about 1975, I think, in there somewhere, to teach math. And at that time, she also, we had the privilege at the Salem Mennonite Church to have her a part of our congregation during that time when she was here. And so it's good again to see you in the same church as we're both here together. So she taught math for a while, but then when a mental break came, then she returned to Ohio and spent time there then with her family and still lives in that area. Her parents had owned a tire company called M.E. Miller Tire Company, I think, and she and her brother own that now and continue, and they've been enlarged it, I think, quite a bit since her parents had it. So in the last 7 years, she has been speaking more in various places about mental health and about bipolar, which she was diagnosed with some time ago. And so she has spoken many places and giving ideas to people who may need some help with that. So I'm not sure, Bev, you're not aware of this question, but do you still like garage sales?
I do.
Okay.
Do you have one coming up tomorrow?
No, I don't. Probably should, but I don't. Back in around 1998 or 9, Dora and I made a trip to the northeastern states to see all the fall colors. And so we were driving from Chicago back there, and then we didn't know, we were just meandering along and stopping at this shop and stopping at that one. And then we came through Pennsylvania, Ohio, and we wanted to stop and see Bev for a few minutes, but we didn't know when we'd be there, so we didn't make any appointment. And so we stopped at her parents' place, and they said, oh, we will go find her. She's out garage sailing today. So we got in their car, and your father drove us around. We went to the first one. No, she isn't here, but she was going to go over to that one. These were, I think, kind of in the country. And so they weren't just like next door. And so we went to two or three, and then we found Bev. So we had a wonderful visit with her that evening and then continued our journey. So she's been here a couple of times in Oregon since those days, But it's a privilege to have her here this morning, and we want to give her our full attention. So I'd like to pray for you first, Bev. Dear God, I thank you for Bev. I thank you for her testimony of your love and your care. Thank you for her family who loved her so much and assisted with her through the years. We just thank you for the contribution she made to Western Mennonite School and to the students and staff there. And so today I pray that you'll give her the words to share with us. Lord, I just pray that you will give her the recollection of things she wants to say to us and to bless us by hearing your word through her this morning. So we thank you again for her and all the good she's accomplished in life and how she's been a close friend to so many people. So I personally thank you for Bev this morning. So Jesus, may you bless her and anoint her with your words. In your name I pray, amen.
I don't carry a big Bible to look religious, but it has big print in it, and I've gotten a lot older. Remember those skinny ones we used to carry? I thank you, and to Peter Epp, who couldn't be here, for accepting my invitation to come. I was coming to the class reunions, looking forward to that, and as I'm a part of a study, I really like to be in the Mennonite churches to pass on that information, which I'll come to later. And so I contacted Peter Ebb, and in Portland I talked for about 10 minutes during their sharing time to at least be able to explain something. I hope some of you have already received the copy that I send ahead, and that tells about some about that, also tells part of my story. That way I don't have to go into depth. And if you haven't, it's available in the church office. I took my computer to the Detroit airport, but I forgot the charger. And the battery's dead. So it's in my car, probably frying in the Midwest high temperatures. So anything I'd written or any outlines I ever used, of course, weren't available, but that's fine. I'd start over anyway. So I don't know when I took the grasp of Psalm 139 and said it fits. Now, I know it fits for a lot of people for different reasons, and I also know that we've all had our wildernesses. We don't even know how many people have silent illnesses in the mind or the body. We know how to talk to somebody who broke their leg, for example. But hopefully you can follow your bulletin printout of the psalm, because for the sake of time to also give you some of the tips that have come from within me over the years, I really am going to pick and choose a little way through here, okay? But I talk to give hope, to educate, to maybe lessen the stigma. I mean, I've had 45 great years, or whatever. I want to start out, though, first by explaining bipolar. It is like an exciting ride to the top of a roller coaster. It's exhilarating as things build on things and you get to the top. But the top can take you off the top of the roller coaster into the clouds, so that your mind is warped. My brother met us when we flew home from Elkhart, well, here to Elkhart in 75. My brother told my sisters, don't ask Bev anything that makes her think, because she's lost the ability to do so. Now it's the same brother I co-own Miller Tire with, and sometimes I roll my eyes because he wants me to come into his office again because he wants to discuss this and this and this, you know, not go forward without me. So it's been a big difference. So I'm saying about going off the top. And when I left here, it was a month before my mind cleared. I left at Thanksgiving and at Christmas with my family. I came home from the psychiatric unit to my family for Christmas, and I still, you know, was thinking my 4'11 sister-in-law was my size, just as an example. My mind cleared in January, but then the devastating depression, and some of that was well-founded. Bipolar will climb to the top and then can plunge way below the earth into a very dark depression. That's why it's bipolar. Back then it was known as manic depression. I felt like I had lost everything, all the successes I'd ever had. You know, everything was voided. I had a full year of depression, and depression with a capital D. As I look back now, I'm really grateful that my episodes were so big that nobody would say I'm not bipolar, okay? I had a second one while I was at home. My mother had said, you can wash anything in cold water. You know, if you have a stain, you use cold water first. And at that point, I filled up the tub with cold water, and you can chuckle on this one. I filled up a tub with cold water and proceeded to put things in it. I'm cleaning them. And that included cleaning out the medicine cabinet, so it was full bottles of mom and dad's prescriptions and dad's electric razor. And that took me back to the hospital again. I always said it was a month, but I recently saw some bills, and it looks like it was 6 weeks, actually. That's when they used to do that. A third incident happened, and that was in the early 80s already, and I was already teaching Bible school and Sunday school. But I see my psychiatrist, and they would never do that again in this day and age. But he said, you're doing so well, I think you're going to go off the medication. And my weight, every time I got on the scales, went down, you know, and I got back into, you know, really caring about high heels and all that stuff. But I started writing for the newspaper. And, you know, everything that I heard from somebody was a story. You know, it wasn't that I was making money on it, but I was loving interviewing and writing their stories. And so I had a really great summer. And it was building, but I didn't go off the top. But it's the most significant because the 1st of September, I typed. So you know how old that was. I typed on my work typewriter, and I wrote, why is life so black? And I went into a deep depression, and nothing had changed. I mean, my home, my work, my friends, nothing had changed, and yet it went into blackness. So that is true bipolar, where, you know, I went up and went down. But now to the scriptures. This is a message. We need to do this too. Okay, so if you pull out your papers, I'm not going to read from the beginning. There's significance in a lot of it. God knows our thoughts from afar. I was thinking a lot of things that the staff and friends and church would have had no idea I was thinking because I wasn't sharing my thoughts. And so this didn't just happen over Thanksgiving. It was a buildup of thoughts and ideas and the scripture popping. And this is one example. I really knew that I was going to be arrested for being a Christian. And I wasn't afraid of it. It wasn't like I was it was anxiety. But I so knew that that was going to happen. Now, a Corrie Ten Boom movie, the year before, something might have fit into that, but I actually packed a duffel bag. So when my mom and sister came, they thought maybe I got hungry during the night because I had crackers in it and songbook. But I didn't even tell them then what it was for. And I didn't want my family in Ohio to be also arrested because of me. My brother asked once, you didn't think we were Christian? I said, no, that's not what it is. I didn't want you implicated in my arrest. And I had a Miller Tire jacket back when they would sew these huge emblems on the back. And I cut that out and burned it. But thankfully, I don't think I ever wore the jacket either, but with it cut out. But so, you know, things were building up. And praise God that he held it off till Thanksgiving when I was not teaching. So his timing is wonderful. So it says about the thoughts from afar. God knew them. God was waiting with me. And Also, the lying down and the going out, if you've ever gone through depression, I know there's people with other stories, and I value your stories and hope that you can share your stories. But when I was depressed, I felt glued to the bed. I just couldn't even hardly make it out of the bed. And I was late to work and that kind of thing. So also, well, I'm going to get that part later. But anyway, you know, you just can't move. And even now, if something gets me down, I go to bed and put the covers over my head. And, you know, so I know that's still a way that I cope. And going out. Normally, I'm an extrovert. When I was depressed, I was an introvert. And I came back to Salem as a totally different person for the last couple months of that school year. But so he knows when we're lying down in depression or we're going out with enthusiasm and loving to go out. That is my take on these scriptures. And also, God hems us in. Behind and before, he had some things in place for me and came up and behind me to also to help. When I think of hemming me in, I think like a presidential, back then I was thinking of a different president, but a motorcade where they were covered on all sides for protection. Or I think of a football player, you know, that they're protecting so they can go on. Well, my hemming me in, probably number one, was that my father, who had a set of businesses, when I went to college in 1970, the Emmy Miller & Son trucking business turned into Emmy Miller Tire. Well, I wouldn't have gone home to be a trucker, but they could work me into the business. Even though I hated it at that time, I wanted to be a math teacher. But when I came back out and tried, I realized that I couldn't do that for a while. So that was part of hemming me in. A little girl was born in 1975 that I met in about when she was 5 years old through an interesting story about Bible school. And her mom and dad didn't attend a church, but she went with me to everything. And she grew up in the church. She was baptized in the church. And her parents did come when she was baptized. And her mother had said, "We're not going to talk, you talk for us." But after I said something, the mother came up to the mic and thanked the church for what they had done in accepting Carrie. Carrie was a bright girl. It's not like I went out and found a poor student or anything like that. She's very, very smart and very, very excited, and it took me through some of those times when I didn't really feel like being there. So she actually graduated, still going to church with me, and at graduation, the students handed out a rose to their mother, and her mother was sitting on this side, and I was sitting on this side by the aisle, and her mother walked across and handed me the rose that her daughter had given her. Carrie became a lawyer, and she's actually the one who helped me buy my second home, you know, make the negotiation. So, you know, that was hemmed in place. My pastors who came in 77, the pastor had decided in 75 to enter the ministry after being a school teacher. So I just know that God had prepared a place. And if we rise on the wings of the dawn, if we settle on the far side of the sea, I flew out here, well, I drove out here first, but I went from Ohio to Eastern Mennonite to Western, you know, and God was with me. This was the best place for me to have been. I just want to clear anybody's mind. I said something to Carl Swartz, and he said, "It's good to hear." So I hope people are no longer feeling like, "This was a sad place for me." It was a good place for me. Even your right hand will guide me. And that's part of where I was plugging in that answering the call to come to Western was the right thing to do. You know, I was in a quandary of a couple things, and I made that decision that was right. If we say, "Surely the darkness," will hide me, and the light become night around us. When you're depressed, it's hard to find light. It's hard to find any hope. And life is very dark. But the darkness isn't darkness to God. The night will shine like the day and sometime again, for darkness is as light to you. And then I like this chapter, but then I would get to, and you created me in my mother's womb. I know that full well. And for 35 years or whatever, I wanted to say, God didn't make this devastating thing happen to me. My God of love would not have done that. And so it wasn't until the very first time that I was asked to speak at a church, and I'm saying this, and the thought just flowed right through me, and it was, maybe for such a time as this, you know, that I had this to share. I had been a writer and speaker, but never about my mental health publicly. I mean, one-to-one, yes, all the time, but publicly I hadn't. And it just seemed to fit at that moment, that people were very receptive, and they had a sharing time, and it was that they were able to share then. But the next couple days, I got to thinking, how many of you knit? I only crochet. Okay. You don't usually knit with one thread. You can add colors and that kind of thing. And so in the next couple of days, I thought, well, one of my psychiatrists had said, it's very unusual for a person to remember everything, what they were thinking, what the week held, what people said. And I remember every detail of that time. You jagged my memory on the garage sales. I didn't remember that, but I remember all that other detail. And she said, you must be very intelligent. And I said, I am. So I think it's wonderful that God knit me with that intelligence that I could remember. I'm not talking about what other people told me I did. I can talk about what it was and not forget the depression, not forget that other people can be hurting behind I'm fine smiles. And also, I was birthed as a youngest child. And I have some of that youngest child syndrome, you know. I like to communicate. My sister would say I like attention. She was the oldest. But, you know, this comes naturally for me, too, to speak. And so it's all that combination made a very good thing. And it made it, I mean, I have a mission at this time in my life to share with other people. And sometimes when I'm running a little underline, I just tell myself, that's important too. I don't leave that feeling of what depression was. And if I were always up here, people wouldn't even approach me for their feelings and all. And I know it will pass. That is the one thing I know, is that I've gotten past it before and it will pass again. A B12 deficiency is almost, you know, made me wonder what was going on. But I have a very self-awareness, and when that was talked about and found out that I was low in B12, which is a whole other story, was taken care of. And so I got some of my energy back. My mood that was kind of going downhill. One time I was on a medication and I was just falling. And again, that was caught. But it's a self-awareness that has grown in me very much. Now, I had to come to grips with that it was in my mother's womb too, because after I talked in 2012 at my friend's church, he called me and said, there's a notice in the magazine called The Mennonite, and he said they're asking for people who are diagnosed with bipolar if they would be part of a genetic study on the National Institute of Mental Health in Bethesda, Maryland. And it was a couple months before I looked it up, because I didn't get the Mennonite. One time I remembered and looked at the church, and I wrote to them, and the question surprised me. They said, "Are you Mennonite?" Well, I saw it in the Mennonite magazine, so anyway, so I responded, yes, for generations, you know. Mennonites married Mennonites, Amish married Amish. And it wasn't even until, I think, after they took the blood work, which they had somebody local do it. There's no expense involved. In fact, there's a little bit of a stipend. And Dr. Layla had come to talk to me. There's an interview. She generally likes face-to-face, but she could also do phone if it's too far distant. And asking me, you know, what some of my symptoms were, what some of the medications I had been given when it wasn't correctly diagnosed. Anyway, it was later that I found out it is the Mennonites and Amish that they are studying. And this is an opportunity for us Mennonites who really care about the world and the future to be a part of a study that is going to make a difference. They're seeking better medications. And they have other I could just talk about other reasons they chose the Mennonites and Amish. But even when they came to do a program at Central, they did not want to put the ad in the local paper, even though we have a lot of Mennonites around Archbold, but they didn't want to put the ad in the local paper because they didn't want to turn people away. So anybody, I'm trying to think what I did with my, it must be in my car in my suitcase, I hope. Anybody who chooses can contact them. If you have a family member or been diagnosed or passed the information on to somebody who's been diagnosed, they will decide if you're qualified or not. I went back later. I had a tractor show to go to. And so in the tire business, we are known for selling tires for antique farm equipment, okay? And I'm not saying this to brag. I'm saying this to so you have the impact of what it means. One of our police deputies was in Montana. And when he told when the guy asked him where he's from, he said, Wauseon, Ohio. And that person said, that's where I get my tires from Miller Tire. Okay, so it's fun. It turned out to be, I love my job. It's the best teaching situation I could possibly have with customers and figuring out what they need with my staff. You know, it's the best job I could have. And I can be creative and all that. Okay. So I was going to a tractor show, and I decided in Pennsylvania. So I decided I could fly into Baltimore, and so I contacted the staff, and she said, "Oh, sure, you know, you can come and see us." And they even put me up for the night in the hotel the night before, and I was flying the next day. And she said, got back to me. She said, "Would you do a couple other tests?" And I said, "Sure." She said, "Well, we would like to take some skin cells," and I said, "Well, you have my DNA from the blood." And you know, I wasn't protesting. I just thought that's odd, and also I did a kind of an intelligent. I know it was. There's another word for it. Like it was puzzles, and it was an intelligence kind of test, how I could think through things. Anyway, and Dr. McMahon himself is the head researcher, and so after I had the other puzzles done. One thing Megan said is, you're very persistent. You know, you don't give up. This has taken longer than it's ever taken for anybody else. But he came in and he numbed a spot here, and then he put in a medication. It made a perfect mosquito bite about this size. I mean, perfectly round, humped up. And he's talking to me the whole time. In fact, he gave me his cell phone in case I had any problems with it healing. But he scraped it off while he's telling me that we can keep your cells, right? And then we multiply them, and we can change them into other cells, and we actually change them into mini brains cells, okay? So that they can take, like you used to do in a Petri dish, and add medications to it that they're developing to see if they work. Isn't that something? My story, my DNA, and all of that will outlast me, okay? So that is part of what I came to tell you. And I have leaflets. I'm not sure if on the story that you have in your office if I gave the contact information, but I will check my suitcase before, you know what, but they're sitting at the Airbnb, which is Bernard Showalter's grandson. So I think I could get them to you to bring to church. Okay. And what was interesting, it explains the study, what they're doing, but it doesn't mention Mennonite and Amish, okay? But I sanded some out at the Western Reunion, and someone picked up on there's a picture of a horse and buggy. And on the front cover, it is like a Pennsylvania horse and buggy theme. And they really did start with what they called the plain people. Almost all their work was done with the Amish or older or Mennonites. So my being able to let you guys know, you know, I think this is a whole new concept for them. And enough on that, because I do want to get to the other steps. Okay, that pretty much takes care of that. Of course, God knew who I would become, and he's walked with me through it. People in my home community the people outside of my church and maybe some other Mennonite churches that knew that something had happened were really surprised and really came forward. Some people came forward because of it when three newspapers did an article on myself in anticipation of them coming and giving a program. And they all were given different, you know, it's just conversation. So they all had different pieces of my story, and they did very well with it. They were very sensitive in the interview and in the writing as well. And even since then, I had Farmland News call me and say, we have a health and fitness issue coming up, and my editor wanted me to see if you would talk to us about it. And what was kind of funny is when I got the proof on it, it said, Journey with Mental Illness. And Central Church has gone from praying for those suffering mental illness to, I suggested, how about those seeking mental wellness? And now it's all seeking mental wellness in any facet. You know, so anyway, and so I called them, and also the writer, and I said, can you change that to health, okay? And so it came out and said, it said mental illness health journey or something like that. You know, they added the health instead of taking out the illness. But you know what? That said, a lot of people picked up papers because of that. Who would pick up a paper about mental health? So I think it really was a God thing that happened too. Okay, but part of the time I wanted to spend on, and there's not much you can do to keep somebody from being manic. My biggest thing is prescriptions, okay? I was born a rule follower, I was raised a rule follower, so I have always taken the medications as prescribed. If you know somebody who's bipolar, you likely know it because they're good when they're on medication, so they stop it for several reasons, and then they relapse again and again and again. My sister-in-law was told that Bev, on the second episode in the hospital, was told Bev will be in and out of the hospital for the rest of her life. But I've had, you know, it's been good. I hope you can see. What's one reason I'd rather speak than write? Because you can tell that I'm enjoying life. Okay, this is my number one thing for approaching people. I don't know, it sounds picky for the person who is feeling well, but I hated going to church when I was depressed. Do you know why? It wasn't the service. It was the, hi, how are you? And that when somebody's depressed, have something go in their life you might not see, that can just stab the heart. And so I offer you the suggestion. If you can say, good to see you, or glad you're here, it just makes a world of difference. They can say, good to see you too. Now, there are people in my life that, both for me and also for them, different people, we have sort of covenanted. I asked if I can ask, how are you? And he knows I mean it, you know, and I'll stay and talk. But that's one simple one, but I think it makes a real difference. You don't even know if the person asking you is feeling good, but they're smiling, right? Okay. Another one is include the person, you know, if you go out to eat, take them, but don't go with that person you alone. This is where three is not a crowd. Three is not a crowd. Because I had no opinions. I was doing nothing but laying on the couch watching television. I didn't have anything to talk about. But with a third person, they can be talking, and I can still feel that I'm there and involved. And I'm also not required to say how I feel. So that was my second suggestion, is go with three. And you don't have to remind me that I gained weight. I know it. I hate it. But perhaps when you have a party, you can serve healthy foods. Perhaps when you go out to eat, you can choose healthy choices. I might not follow you. I might still go what I want. And maybe you pass on dessert, you know? It doesn't mean that I have a friend who's very healthy, and I didn't follow her all the time. But just a thought. You might also, four is, expect a new normal. My dad was told when I came home from Oregon that he should insist from some people, other people at home, that he should insist on my healing. And Dad said, I can't insist. You know, prayer, yes, but he couldn't insist. And that tells me something. That tells me that my dad was ready to accept who I was, even though I was different. And so maybe the person won't come back to being who they were before. I remember the one time in church that one of my mom's friends said, oh, it's so good to see the same Bev again. And I thanked her. I had a lot of girls since then, too. But in my mind, I'm saying, I think I'm better, Bev, because now I have a compassion for people. You know, it's not all success and roses. And, yeah, so I think it's even better because of that. But I didn't say that to her. Okay. Help the person continue their responsibility. Don't take, in the last 15 years or whatever, one of our elders at North Clinton when I was there was diagnosed as bipolar, was hospitalized. And I'm glad my sister, who was an elder, called me and she said, should we drop him from being an elder? And I said, definitely not. He may not participate as much. He had about a year left of 3-year term. I said, don't drop it. Just let him participate as much as he cares to. But because from my own experience, I was going to direct a Christmas carol with community theater, which sets and everything are galore. And that was when everything got so black. I'd put some people in place ahead of that, but when it got so black, I wanted out of it. They didn't let me out of it, but they buckled up and did so much for me. And I went through, you know, it wasn't even a joy for me when it was so well received. It wasn't until January of the next year that I could really say I was fine. I went back to the doctor, by the way, in September of that year, and he put me back on lithium. But it took a long time. I mean, I'd rather have been in bed than at play practice. So don't take away, but maybe help them. Exercise is a little bit like saying I'm gaining weight. I know I should exercise, but why didn't you ask me to do it with you? And don't walk behind me, pushing me, and this is in figurative sense, and don't walk ahead of me, walk with me. The meds are very important. That's probably my number one statement to everybody. The meds have been made, and I am, Dr. McMahon said, I'm one of the lucky ones that responded to lithium. Not everybody does. But this is just one small tip about the meds. If you have somebody on medication for mental health and the doctor lowers it a bit, please don't act really excited with your person that he lowered it, because what does that say about taking it to begin with? And yes, I'm taking medication for life, so was a diabetic. And you don't expect a diabetic to stop taking their medication or wean themselves off. It's hard enough taking medication for mental health, but, you know, just recognize that. Don't throw scriptures at the person. let them find their own or say them to you. I didn't need to hear, for example, that God did this to make you a better person. Well, I don't want to be a better person if that's what's going to happen. Pray on your own for them, okay? Not always. And don't, when you're with them, I'm just jumping around here a little bit, but I'm about to number nine. When you're with them, don't just talk about the illness and how they feel. Talk about memories. Talk about things you could do together. Talk about yourself and also your sadness in life. My favorite hymn is 307, which is, "Will you let me be your servant?" But it turns around and says, "May I be able to let you serve me too." And as a caregiver, find yourself a caretaker of yourself. It's probably best if it's not somebody that even knows the son, daughter, or whatever, but somebody that you can share with, somebody that can have your care in mind. But if people in good intentions come up to you and say, "Well, how's Bev doing?" You as a caregiver don't have to tell everybody the whole story, okay? You can say, "I thought about five different ways to say it if they continue to persist," as well as can be expected. "Oh, what's going on?" "Well, hey, we're hanging in there." "Please pray," and we are trying to be helpful to them, and it's difficult. But you don't have to say, "Well, now yesterday, they walked a mile," or whatever. You don't have to share that with everybody. And I think my father was very quiet about it, and my mother, but it was my story, not his story, but he was protecting me. To the extent that two cousins my age I talked to in the last 4 or 5 years, one was only told by her mother, and her mother was somebody who'd tell everything she knew, that mom and dad came to Oregon and my refrigerator was empty. That's all she knew all those years. And the other one didn't know anything that had happened except that I came home. So, you know, it's kind of amazing, but families go through so much, and I was so fortunate to have a family and other friends too. Bless you, and if you have any questions, I'm actually going to be staying overnight tonight, and I don't have to be into Salem until 6 o'clock, so if there's anybody that wants to talk about anything or share your own wilderness experience, whatever it is, I'd be happy to meet with you or talk to you afterwards here, too. Thank you.